You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makai Watch is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Hawaii Compassionate Care, Garden Island Hydro, Kauai Pharmacy, Yakadusi Bagelry.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com. That's 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday. More information at 246-4769. That's 246-GROW and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
Kauai Pharmacy, an organic herbal tea farm in Kilauea, serving locally grown organic loose-leaf herbal tea, freshly brewed hot and iced teas, elixirs, raw extracts, and more. The Kauai Pharmacy promotes a lifestyle of self-healing and optimal health. The Kauai Pharmacy Tea Wagon is now located at Na'ainaho Community Park, just outside of Kauai Mini Golf in Kilauea. Open Tuesday to Friday from 11 to 4 p.m. and Saturday from 9 to 1. More information at 828-6525 and online at kauaipharmacy.com. That's KAUAIFARMACY.com.
Fresh, organic, hand-rolled, boiled bagels from Yakadus Bagelry. Bake fresh Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Yakadus Bagels are available at Small Town Coffee, Hoku Foods, and Papayas in Kapa'a. Also, Rainbow Joe's in Lihue. Orders can be made at Yakadus Bagel at yahoo.com. That's Yakuddus Bagel at yahoo.com. Thanks for supporting your local bagelry.
Mahalo, Hawaii Compassionate Care, Garden Island Hydro, Kauai Pharmacy, and Yakadus Bagelry. We appreciate your support of Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel alone, singing a song side by side.
Aloha, and welcome to Makai Watch. I'm Maka'ala, the host of the show. It's a program about the aina, those things that feed us, focused on information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai. Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. The Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, now in its fourth printing. We have the 2015 calendars, and they are fabulous. Please call the Hanalei Watershed Hui if you would like your copy. You can stop by and pick one up at the Hanalei Watershed Hui office as well. The phone number at the office is 826-1985. Thank you to KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us. We'll be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for the day. And you can then call 826-7771 with questions and comments. We'll also be running our regular contest today, so listen for the question and win a prize. If you have ideas for future shows, please let us know. We would love to put information out there that is needed and wanted, and we have a plethora of expertise on this island. We should take advantage of them and get them up here in the studio and have those discussions that you're interested in having. Today's show is just like that. Today's show is about corals. I think that we're all aware that at least on the island of Kauai, it has been the subject of much discussion over the last 3-4 years. And some of the information that is out there is accurate and some is not. Some is conjecture and some is just simply guessing. And so as legitimate information and facts are now more available than they were 3 and 4 years ago, Mackay Watch thinks that it's now the time for us to get some real information and some facts. And we have the opportunity today to talk to three people who have been intimately involved in the scientific investigation of the corals on Kauai. I do want to add that there has been work done on the corals of Kauai for 20 years. The Hanalei Watershed Hui has been a partner with the Coral Reef Assessment and Monitoring Program, and Drs. Alan Friedlander and Eric Brown of the National Park Service have been studying the corals in Hanalei for over 20 years. So many of the things we're going to talk about today are not brand new, but the focus of today's show is the recent outbreak of the coral disease and what efforts are being expended to better understand what that's about and what folks like us can do about that. As an island state, corals are a key aspect of our environment. Certainly we all appreciate the beauty and the recreational value of the coral reef, but it's also a key part of our resilience, just as a physical island. It provides a buffer and a safety zone, if you will, for people who live on islands. And so I think this discussion is timely because now we know stuff, and I think it's important because we live on an island. So first today, with me in the studio, I'd like to introduce Katie Nalasere, who is the education specialist at the State of Hawaii, Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Aquatic Resources, in their Kauai office. So she is our Kauai person for this kind of information. She'd be happy to take questions and comments, but also wants you to know that you can contact her at the state office in Lihue, and when she finishes, I'm hoping and assuming she'll give you her contact telephone number so that you can do exactly that and get a hold of her directly. She's been doing a lot of work with the Watershed Hui on the North Shore and with Waipa Foundation and with many other organizations on the island because this is what she's good at and what she knows how to do. And I'm very excited that she's been willing to come in and talk to us a little bit about her job. So mahalo, Katie, for coming on the show. I'd like you to begin by just telling us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Okay, aloha, maka'ala, and you listeners out there. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you all today. Just a little bit about my job and myself. Like Auntie Maka'ala said, I work for DLNR, Division of Aquatic Resources, and my job title is Education Specialist. In that position, I'm very lucky to work with communities, school groups, and other community groups around the island running activities and educational programs about our aquatic resources on island. And that covers everything from our deep sea species all the way to our o'opu in our mountain streams. So I'm very lucky. Most of my programs are done by request, so we're always looking for groups that are interested, want to learn about fishing or aquatic resources. We're always available to come and give talks, run some games, or just talk story if you have concerns about our aquatic resources.
I want you to tell folks where you came from.
And just a little bit about my background. I studied at Appalachian State University. During that time, I was very lucky to go to Australia and study about tropical ecology and conservation, which ultimately led into my post-college job, which was with the Peace Corps. I was sent down to Vanuatu, which is a very small island country in the South Pacific, about as far south and west as you can get in the tropics down there. I worked just with the village doing environmental education and some fisheries projects, which focus on stock assessment and enhancement of some over-harvested invertebrates. Then I transitioned into running their community-based coral reef monitoring program. So I actually was able to work in that position for 5 years. And basically that covered going out into communities, training them in the basics of coral reef ecology, and then training them to monitor their own resources. And I loved that job. It was great. After that, I stayed on and ended up working for an integrated watershed resource management project, which was being run around the Pacific. I was a technical advisor for that project. So I got to partner with a lot of different government agencies and really focus on integrated management, which is what Hanalei Watershed Hui is doing. After that, I came up here and have been the educational specialist now for about a year and a half on Kauai.
Yeah, it's a perfect background. It's your training and your experience is all about community first. And for those of us that work with agencies and bureaucracies and state and federal governments, it's refreshing when we have somebody with your background, because you understand the credibility and you understand the role that the community plays in this kind of thing. So what we had on the North Shore when you got here was a whole lot of stuff being said about our corals and the condition of our corals. There were many people saying many different things, and you kind of stepped right into the middle of all of that and had to kind of sort out what was real and what wasn't real. And that was a real opportunity, a very important opportunity for both the community and the state and the other scientific research facilities to sort of begin anew and really take a look at, okay, what is really going on. So what I'd like you to do is just give us a little bit of general information about the corals that you're aware of on Kauai with your background, and a little history about the outbreak that of this disease that we've experienced in the last few years.
Okay, thank you for that. And just like you said, my job is to listen, to collect the best information I can, and to share it. That's really my role within DAR. So just going into what we do know about corals, corals are an animal. They are a slow-growing animal that coexists with a specialized algae called zooxanthellae. The coral polyp, or that's the name of the animal, provides the zooxanthellae with a home, and in return, the zooxanthellae provides the coral with essential nutrients to grow. Okay, and today we'll mostly be talking about reef-building corals, or our hard corals. Most of the corals that we see are actually a colony, so it's a lot of individual polyps growing together to create this colony. As animals, they are susceptible to disease, just like every animal is, and as such, they can get sick and sometimes die. Within populations, we expect to find disease. It's a natural aspect of populations. We call that a background level when it's just a normal amount of disease within a population. When it gets to high levels, we can call that an outbreak. Extreme cases, we would call it an epidemic. So in the Caribbean, there have been diseases which has killed up to 80% of the coral. And so we'd call that definitely an outbreak. And that could be akin to cutting down 80% of the tree in a forest. That kind of death has a severe impact that's felt all throughout that ecosystem. Corals are stressed by a lot of things. They're a very sensitive animal that's very developed to their habitat. So things can stress them out. And these things can be natural, and they can be man-made. So some of the natural stressors are things like hurricanes, large freshwater inputs from heavy rains, rivers. That's why we usually don't find high coral growth at the mouth of a river, because freshwater does stress them out. Fluctuations in water temperature, which can be natural or through climate change. And then some of the man-made things are things like pollutants, poor water quality, sedimentation. Again, a natural and man-made thing. So you can see some of the things are natural but can be kind of exacerbated by humans, creating a more of an impact on the corals. And also, like I said, climate change, which touches on sea surface temperatures and ocean acidification. When corals are stressed, they do become more susceptible to diseases. Just like ourselves, when we're stressed out, we're more likely to catch that flu or be run down. So we do know any kind of stressor could have a big impact on disease. So talking about the disease that we do have here on Kauai right now, it's called a black band disease. It's similar to diseases that have been found around the world. Black band disease has been spotted in the Caribbean and in the Red Sea as well. This disease was first spotted in Hanalei Bay in 2004 by researchers from NOAA and University of Hawaii. It was spotted then in background levels. So again, that's kind of an expected thing. We expect to see diseases there, but it was at lower levels. So between 2004 and 2009, They did observe that disease during their surveys, but at lower levels. Then in 2012, it was reported by an Eyes of the Reef network member. And Eyes of the Reef is a community-based network that trains people to identify impacts to coral, such as bleaching, disease, crown of thorns outbreaks, and report them. And this is a really essential network because we can't be everywhere all the time. So this network gives us feedback and allows us to go out and check and see what's really happening with our reef, follow up on these reports. So it was reported that this black band disease was seen outside of the previous reported area and at 10 times background level. So now that really raises a red flag for us. And when we saw that research was initiated, which my colleagues will get into in a little bit, and this disease continues to be present and impact our corals on the North Shore of Kauai today.
And thanks, Kitty. That's a wonderful review. So the issue is that we need to consider corals as part of our community that is impacted by the same things that we're impacted by. So I remember that the question that I asked way back when they first discovered it, and that I am asked as I go around the community now, is, so what changed? You know, and I know Christina and Ann will talk about that, but the idea is, so if they're impacted by all those things, all those conditions, environmental conditions, we had those way back when. So the research is focusing on what tipped, you know, what changed. I'm hoping that this conversation today will also excite people enough to want to get the Eyes of the Reef training. It's extensive training. When you go through the training, you really are quite good at identifying these things, and the opportunities for error in your reporting are minimized. We have offered it once in Hanalei. I just want folks to know that it's a serious bit. It's not learning how to swim. It's true observation, citizen science. And it is the partnership that we have between the people that are in the water all the time and our scientific folks. Also want to be sure that if any of these opportunities are interesting to our listeners, that we have information for them at the end on not only how to get a hold of you, but also to have you come. Because you and I sometimes work together on a coral unit that we do with children, and it's just too much fun, and I want to keep having that kind of fun because it's good fun for me, and the kids love it. Want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Makai Watch, KKCR, KAQA in Hanalei and Kilauea, and this will be a call-in show. Usually how we handle this is that we introduce the subject and our guests and then wait for your calls then, because that way you know what you're asking about and we don't step on each other's lines. I'm hoping that we have Christina Runyon, who is a graduate research assistant in marine biology and the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. She's been doing much of the focused research on this outbreak, and we've asked her to call in today so that she can talk a little bit about her work and make herself available, Bambai, for your questions should you have specific ones about her research. Katie has a lot of information and knowledge, but if folks want to know what the research scientists are actually doing, Christina's getting her PhD on this disease and on this situation, so that gives you a clue as to how much work she's doing and how deeply she's involved in it. Christina, are you there?
Aloha, Auntie Maka'ala. Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you. We love it when technology works.
I know, it's great.
Our engineer is going, oh, phew. It's a good thing, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Mahalo so much for the opportunity to share the information that we've gathered over the last couple of years doing work on the reefs out there. I'm really glad that we can give some insight to the community and just sort of let people know what we're seeing in a scientific manner.
Great. Before you get started into the depths of this thing, would you also tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been here in Hawaii for over 20 years. I live on the island of Oahu. I live out in the country in Ka'ava. As you stated, I am a PhD student. I'm in my fourth year at UH Manoa. I received my Bachelor of Science also at Manoa in biology with marine biology emphasis. I've been trained by Dr. Greta Abbey in coral reef ecology and coral health since 2007, and my specialty is being able to recognize coral diseases in the field, and I also work in the lab where myself and my lab mates, we identify coral pathogens, mostly bacterial pathogens responsible for disease. I'm also an Eyes of the Reef primary and secondary responder. I do give Eyes of the Reef trainings here on Oahu, and I've given one on Kauai. I'm a UHM scientific diver, so that means I'm allowed to go out into the field and do research with scuba tanks, and I've been on this project since 2012.
Yes, and we're grateful to you for that. I'm very excited about the fact that there's even an opportunity for someone to get a PhD in this work, and I think it says two things. One, how important our coral reefs are to us, that a PhD project would be accepted and available for someone to do this work, and two, that people care enough to go to that extent of study and effort that it takes to get a PhD in this field. We're thankful to you for the work, and I know that a student is a student no matter what the level is, and you do it on the cheap, and we want the world to know that that's appreciated, and nobody's making a whole lot of money at this. When this whole thing is when your PhD is POW, when it's completed, are you planning to stay in this field?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do also have a background in marine mammal biology and conservation, but I plan to stay here in Hawaii, and marine mammal biology conservation is pretty much taken up by a lot of other people. But I think it's super important to stick with the understanding of the backbone of what makes these islands even feasible of being here, and that's our coral reefs. I mean, if without the coral reefs, we lose sustainability, we lose protection from storm events, we lose tourism, we lose economy, we lose so much. So I think it's really important before our reefs go down the route of what the Florida Keys went down, that just stay on task for as long as I possibly can. I mean, this is my home. I have kids here. I want my children and my grandchildren to be able to go out to the same reefs that I went to and be able to see a lot of the similar things. So I think it's super important just to stay on the task.
I'm really glad you made that point. I mean, it's important for people to know who our researchers are, who our resource people are, and you're a family woman, and this is part of your future as well. So let's get into it then a little bit. Where do you study, what do you see, and what are we going to do about it?
Okay, well, I'm going to just sort of give you an overall, just a real fast overall, some of the findings that we have so far. So this is black band disease, and as Katie, thank you for the introduction, Katie, greatly appreciate it, that, you know, it is a disease that has been seen elsewhere. Right now, around Kauai, it's only seen affecting montiparid species, so that's Montipora capitata, so that's your brown rice coral, and then your blue rice coral, which is Flavellata, and then your sort of sandpapery rice coral, which is Patula. We've predominantly seen the disease along the north shore of Kauai, but we have seen it on the east side as well. So we've surveyed on the north shore 25 sites, and 17 of the sites had signs of black band disease. We've only been able so far on the east side to look at four sites, and unfortunately all four of those sites had black band disease. We've also been able to do the south shore, where we've investigated 21 sites, and we have not found the disease there, which we're very, very happy that we haven't seen it that far. No other cases have been confirmed in the Hawaiian Islands outside of Kauai. The thing that's really, really important to understand about this disease is the progression that it makes across the colony. So imagine there's just this mat, this black mat. It's a semicircular kind of a line, and it's just slowly starting to move across the colony. Well, we went out and we followed some colonies through time, and what we were able to find out is that the disease progression across the colony is relatively quick, and that you lose about 6.5 millimeters of tissue per day while the lesion is active. But it looks as if this may be a seasonal kind of condition where during the warmer water months, any colonies that have this disease, that have the lesion, it moves quickly. But once winter comes, a lot of the colonies, they cease. The lesion stops. I'm not saying every single colony stops, but a lot of them do stop and slow down. Either that, or you do not see the lesion at all anymore, and a little bit of recovery starts to happen. Something that we've been able to do is we have been able to take samples of the lesion, bring it into our lab, put it onto a piece of rice coral, and make the disease happen. So we're pretty confident that this black line, this black mat that we're seeing on the coral is actually causing the disease. Some of the lab stuff that we do is we try to figure out, okay, who is in this mat? Who's causing this? What role do they play? And something that we've seen elsewhere with black band disease is that it's something called a polymicrobial kind of disease, where you have functional groups or different kinds of bacteria within this mat that are causing the death. Just one or two alone really don't do it. You need to have multiple players in order to do it. The key players in this disease is a cyanobacteria, which uses sunlight in order to, it uses sunlight to get its breakdown things, get its nutrition. It's called autotrophic bacterium. And then we also know that there's some sort of sulfur cycling that's happening, where we have sulfur reducing and sulfur and sulfide oxidizing bacterium that are responsible. We have been able to identify two of these main players, one a cyanobacteria that is very similar to the cyanobacteria that was found in Palau and the Red Sea, causing black band disease. And we've also been able to identify a sulfide oxidizing bacteria, which we've determined to be part of a genus called Begiatoa, which has not this exact Begiatoa, but other Begiatoa have been found in black band disease. We've also just been able to sort of touch on the fact that there is sulfur reduction happening within this consortium. And we are doing a full bacterial community analysis and comparison right now, where we've taken bits of coral that have the disease and bits of coral that don't have the disease, and just comparing the bacteria between them. Because corals are a lot like us. You have to have a normal flora and fauna of bacteria to stay healthy. And corals have the same thing. They have some bacteria that keep them healthy, and then when those bacteria get overtaken by other bacteria, it's when you start to see some sort of diseases happen. So this is something that we're trying to figure out right now. Another thing that we've done is that we have tried a treatment in the field where we've gone out and identified corals that are sick with black band, removed the lesion, and have treated it with a non-toxic epoxy. And it seems to be effective on Montipora capitata. We have had some success. We are now trying it on another species of coral. We're trying it on the sandpapery Montipora, and to see if we can see if the treatment works there. The treatment has been used elsewhere, and we didn't just come up with this out of thin air. It was used in Florida and was successful there. And something we have to remember is that this is just a Band-Aid, this treatment that we're doing. Be it, yes, it helps, and it does help with recovery. It's really not feasible to go out and put this on every single sick coral that's out there. Something else has to be done. We need to understand the environmental drivers that are bringing about this consortium to come together, because a lot of these bacteria are found naturally within the environment. We just need to figure out why are they coming together on the surface of the coral, doing the damage that they're doing.
That sounds like a good place to take just a bit of a break.
Yep.
And we're going to do our quiz before we take the break. So this is probably the easier one. I get criticized all the time for doing questions that nobody can answer.
Oh, no.
My old teaching days. But today we're going to do an easy one because you folks have said it several times. So come on now, people. So what's the name of the coral disease that we're talking about? We're going to take a little musical interlude, and we'll be back with you in a few minutes. The number to call for the quiz is 826-7771.
I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden, in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see an octopus's garden with me. I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. We would be warm below the storm, in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our heads on the seabed, in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around, because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be in an octopus's garden in the shade. About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy.
Welcome back. This is Mackay Watch, and today's subject is corals and the coral diseases. And we have a winner. We had a correct answer of black band disease. Okay, so I must be getting better at asking the questions that are at least possible to answer.
Congratulations to Beth in Hanalei.
Great. Thank you, Beth. So today we have with us Katie Nalasere, who is from the Hawaii State Department of Land and Natural Resources Division of Aquatic Resources. We also have Christina Runyon, who is a graduate research assistant in marine biology at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And in a minute, we're going to bring in Ann Rosinski. And I know that we have a caller, and I think what I'll do, since Christina's on the line and she's the one actually doing the work, I think we'll go ahead and take that caller's questions. And you need to know, caller, that we're not quite finished with the whole explanation, but we've had the basics of the science piece and the community education and outreach piece. So,
cool. Yeah.
Aloha. Aloha, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, aloha to everyone, first of all. From an aviation aspect, most of my life saving people who are in danger out here in helicopters in the ocean and stuff, so I have a come-from-the-heart kind of attitude. And being in aviation and living on these islands for most of my adult life, I wasn't born here, have respect for the land and the sea. But what's happening to our oceans is not coming just from, like, the Fukushimas of the world in the currents or with the big plastic and, you know, in the ocean down there swirling, you know, somewhere in the Pacific. We have to be responsible for what's running off this land into our streams and out to our reefs. So it's not just that there's no silver bullet for this. It's an overall understanding, but you can have people at least be accountable for what runs off of this island into its streams and into its channels and reef structures around. It's not just, it's simple, but if you don't approach it at least with that, knowing that you're just chasing a tail kind of thing. But we need to be more diligent in regulating the things that run off, first of all. Because otherwise, it don't matter what you're going to do under the water at that point if you can't figure out what's coming off your own aina and affecting your refrigerator.
I completely agree, and I think everyone of our folks here today would agree as well. And you may or may not be aware, there are several efforts around the state. Maui Nui has an extensive effort, and Hanalei has an extensive effort at addressing the land-based pollutants and the runoff, not just for that reason, but that's going to be an intended consequence of improving the water quality. So thank you very much for your comment. I appreciate it very much.
Let me just ask you one more thing, okay?
Sure.
Aviation aspect, the Australian tree fern eradication that's being done with GPS without, I mean, they addressed it years ago when they started it, and they're using it in the upper echelon valleys of the North Shore, like Waineha, Honolulu, Lomahai. And so this is happening to keep it from going into Kokei'i. So this is like a Roundup on steroids, and they're spraying it from helicopters, and they're having to actually GPS all the locations, and you can find out that through the Nature Conservancy those exact locations, because they're required to give that up and record that and log that. And so some of these mysteries that are going on up in Hanalei in particular couldn't just necessarily from the main river, but some of these tributaries that come down that are being sprayed for this African tree fern, some that was discussed years ago but was never readdressed. And I'll take my answer off the air. Big alohas.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we really do appreciate the call, and we appreciate the question. And I can tell by the last comment that you made that you remember when I was involved in that issue. And, you know, that's an important thing for us all to better understand. And I will handle that. I will take this opportunity and make sure that we do a show on exactly that, who's doing what where. And because that is a Nature Conservancy effort, but not they're not operating alone. And it is difficult for us sometimes to know exactly who's doing what, where, and with what. So thanks for that. That's a good spur for me to get a hold of the local folks that are involved in that. It isn't just TNC. So thanks. I will do that. Okay, so what I'd like to do now, Christina, is introduce Ann Rosinski, and then all three of you can, you know, help each other at some point. But I'd like to introduce Ann, who is a marine resource specialist with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Aquatic Resources, and who has been to Kauai and who has been part of outreach and familiarized herself really very well with the both the scientific work and the community effort that's been going on. Ann's actually come out and helped Katie and me do some of our coral activities with the kids, and that's an important part of what she does. Welcome, Ann. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Okay, so, Ann, would you first please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your work?
Sure. And, yeah, thank you again so much for having us all on the air with you today. It's a great opportunity. So, yeah, once again, I'm Ann Rosinski. I'm with the Division of Aquatic Resources, the same agency that Katie works for, but I'm over here in the main office on Oahu. I was born and raised on the Jersey Shore, so come from a different area, but still very close to the ocean, and it's not exactly what you see in all the reality shows. Just want to write any rumors right there. You know, it's kind of surrounded by small fishing towns, and of course we have huge New York City and the ocean right there, so it was a real interesting place to grow up. I got into marine biology, and I was fortunate enough to first get a degree in environmental science, so I was just so interested in everything having to do with the environment, from the forest to the ocean. I didn't really know where to start, but I got more into tropical marine systems and coral reef ecology, and it just kind of went from there. I've worked in different places in the Caribbean, the Turks and Caicos in Florida, and here in Hawaii. I've worked on several different capacities over the last 7 or 8 years or so, focusing a lot of my efforts on working with communities, also sort of similar to what Katie and Chris have both talked about. I was involved with the Makai Watch program from that time, working with the Waikiki group and then the Pupukea group over here on Oahu. And then in 2013, I began working with the state as a NOAA Coral Reef Conservation Fellow. So I was fortunate enough to get that fellowship. And from that time, I've worked on a few different projects. Continuing my work with the Makai Watch program, I've been developing a curriculum that will train volunteers on resource management and a foundation on marine biology topics. I've also been doing a bit of conservation planning with some folks over on Maui. But the project that I'm here to talk about today is coordinating the state's rapid response contingency plan. And what that is a plan that outlines what the state and all of our partners should do in case of something like a coral disease outbreak happening. It also covers coral bleaching events, which we saw actually this year during the summertime, crown of thorns starfish outbreaks, and different things like that. So that's sort of been my role, and more specifically working on the management side of things.
Wow. It's a lot on your plate. Okay, so one of the things that you are connected with is the management response team.
Right.
And a frustration of community is that if you're not sitting right there at the site of the diseased coral, you do not know who's watching, who's studying, who's thinking, who's reading, who's doing anything. And there actually has been a great deal of work and activity on this disease, and we have waited. I will let our listeners know that we have waited to sit down and really talk about this until we had something to say. You know, we could have brought everybody in and they could have just talked about what they want to do and what they could do, but we intentionally waited until people like Katie and Christina and you have an approach. And one of the things that's been very exciting, which is an old idea, it's something that's been floating around Hawaii for a very long time, is having this, we called it a rapid response team, I think, at one point. So what happens when we find a coral disease, and maybe an Eyes on the Reef volunteer finds it, and it's a credible report, and Christina comes and said, yep, you're right, that's what that is. Then what happens next?
Right. So, yeah, that's a great question. And so following with the state's plan, basically what happens is once we've confirmed that there's been an observation of some type of outbreak, we'll deploy what you referred to, the rapid response team. And their mission is to basically get an initial assessment of, you know, how bad is this event, this disease outbreak that we're talking about, and where is it occurring? So just to gather some basic starting information. And so with this disease, what we had is folks from UH, including Christina and Greta Abbey from HIMB and others from USGS and NOAA, all going out and trying to find out exactly that. So that's sort of what we saw going on in 2013, was gathering up that information. And then from there, again, following with our plan, what happens is that the rapid response team then brings that information to what we call the management response team. And that's the team that I kind of help pull together. So we started meeting the very beginning of 2014. And like I said, the main goals of this group are to discuss the latest research that's coming in. So to review all this information that people in the field are bringing us, we then try to communicate these results out there to the public. So, you know, in this case, what happened is we received the information, and we've been doing a number of different things to try to get the word out there, which included conferences with the press, different news articles. I came over and, you know, we briefed certain county officials, the mayor over in Kauai. I've been meeting with different people at the state. I've also been partnering with, you know, Katie and Chris to get the word out there to people in the community on the North Shore of Kauai, presenting at different conferences. And then ultimately what we're trying to do is identify what, if any, management actions can be taken to address this problem. So along the way, we are looking for things to either stop the impact of this disease or additionally to promote the coral's recovery afterwards. So we're continuing to look at that. I think, like, you know, like we can sort of gather from the discussion thus far, it's a very complex issue. And so I think in the first 2 years, what I was seeing is a lot of focus on the biology, just trying to figure out, you know, as Chris mentioned, what is this disease that we're working with? Where is it occurring? And just, you know, we're just starting to get an idea of maybe some of the environmental things that are pushing it, you know, one way or another.
Yeah, I think our caller actually said there is no silver bullet. You've all heard me, and many in the community have heard my opinion for what it's worth. And I've said there isn't going to be one single smoking gun, and there isn't going to be one single silver bullet. These are all dynamic processes. And I thank the caller also for reminding us that, you know, we understand that the stuff all goes downhill, as the beginning of our show says. You know, this is Makai Watch, because everything ends up in the sea. And to take a broader look at that, I want to take just a second to remind folks that we're talking about corals today on KKCR, and we're happy to take your calls and comments. We have a little time left in the program, but before we end, I want to say a couple things. One, Hanalei has completed something called a watershed management plan, and when we did that, that then qualified us to get in the queue, the lineup, for funding to improve the water quality. So these things take years and years and years and lots of time and effort and more than a little money. And so, again, I know it looks like nobody's doing anything, but I won't say, trust me, but plenty of things really are happening. And we currently are developing a proposal to replace some of the cesspools in Hanalei. That certainly won't hurt. It certainly will help. How much it helps is hard to say. Christina, can you talk a little bit about what the tipping point might have been or might be in this? Could it be, I hesitate to say something simple, but the one thing that we all know as citizen scientists or as lay folks is the one thing that seems to have shifted is the temperature. Is that playing a role here?
Yeah, you know, with what the data that we've collected so far, I mean, we've done a lot of different kind of sourcing of data from looking at water temperature over time during the disease events, looking at the amount of suspended particles that are in the water, taking sediment samples, looking at how much detritus input or organic, possible organic input there is within the sediment substrate. And the one thing that keeps on pointing back is temperature. This disease is known to actually flare up in the warmer months. So something to really think about is with global climate change, the El Nino event that's happening, the bleaching event that we just happened, I mean, still happening as a matter of fact. It was just out in December and colonies are still bleached. Temperature is a bit higher than it was from last year off of my my sensors that I have out on the reef. And if it's going to get warmer, I mean, this will be a concern, not just for this particular disease, but you got to remember that a lot of animals have a certain threshold to which that they can live within a certain temperature. If you increase that threshold, first off, you're going to be increasing the area that animals that wouldn't normally be there can come in, and you could be pushing out animals that are very, very important for reef health out. You can start to see different changes in the structure from the phytoplankton up, just with the increase of temperatures. So it is something to really, really, pay attention to.
And like you said,
there is no silver bullet for it.
Right.
And I think, this is Anne again. I just wanted to say one thing adding on to that is that, Chris brought up a great point that, we have this thought about temperature and, like we're saying, it's a very complex issue. And I think, that's something that we definitely want to get more into this year as a management response team is, we've been really lucky to have folks on that team that provide such precise and amazing expertise in all these different fields. You can see that, this issue at this point kind of spans the spectrum because we don't know exactly where to go, but we're hoping to bring in, folks that are experts in physical oceanography and geology this coming year to kind of bring a fresh perspective and look more at the environment to look for some clues that we can use to identify management actions.
Yeah, I think that's the part that interests me is when all the players get together and the synergy of all the different disciplines. We have a caller, but before we take the call, I want to be sure that we don't run out of time before we say the deal in our website. So, Katie, would you give us the websites for folks?
Yep. Part of our effort, like Anne said, to get public outreach was to launch this website where the public can go every time we get an update, which could be from once a month to every so many months, depending on, how long it takes to process the data. We do post updates for the public to read. So the website for that is dlnr.hawaii.gov/reef-response. And under that reef response website, you'll see responses, and it will detail every kind of response that we're doing, covering the Kauai black band disease, bleaching, or anything else that might be going on. So that website's a great resource for the public. If you want to stay up to date on the issue, just visit that website. And as we get information, we're uploading it to that site.
So before we finish out today, too, Katie will be sure to give you her information, but I also want to remind you that this show will be archived and usually happens on a Wednesday. Is that right? Ah, see, I was listening. And so after Wednesday, you can find the show at the KKCR.org website under archived. And so if you heard something that, you want to know more about, you can go to their website, but also maybe you want to re-listen to something that we said here. So let's take the caller, if we can. And welcome, caller. This is Makaiwa.
Hello. Great show. Thank you, Makaala, for putting this one on and our esteemed speaker here this afternoon. this afternoon. I was wondering if it was morning. Anyway, the question would be is if she had done any research on the effects of the military training in our waters out there and or the microwave transmissions that are being sent through our waters to California and all around.
Thank you. I know that's a subject of some discussion, and Anne, this one's yours.
Sure. We don't have any evidence as a team at this point that would point to military activities, but, again, I don't think, anyone on this show today is necessarily an expert in those types of effects. But
is there any testing being done by you guys in that respect?
We don't know how to test for biological effects on some of these things, so we really, and it's not anything that we're trained in testing. Basically, we just go out and do observation. We don't have any kind of equipment or any kind of knowledge on how to look at the effects of that.
You'd have to be the military itself to know what they're even doing to test for it. So.
Just in analyzing stressors on the reef and on the coral polyps, and that would seem like it would come into question as being a stressor, it would seem to me. I don't know.
It's a good question.
do they want you to ignore this? Have you had any, say, don't look in that direction? Or
oh,
seem like this would
not.
Just be a major. this would be a major disruptor of the reef or life in particular. If it'll kill whales and you know, marine mammals out there, seems like it's a stressor.
You know, like I said, yeah, we haven't seen any evidence to point to military activities as the source of the coral disease that we're talking about today. So it's not that we've been ignoring that, but we don't have any leads that would kind of point us in that direction. We are looking at a number of other different kinds of stressors. You know, like Katie was talking about early in the program, coral reefs are constantly under stress from a lot of different things, including land-based pollution, and, you know, temperature. We talked about temperature. So we are looking at a number of different things, but we're really looking for that direct connection to, you know, what is causing this black band coral disease.
As you were saying, there won't be any silver bullets in this situation, but they could all be contributing to the stressing factors on our reef throughout the Pacific, throughout the world for that matter, with the military doing their testing and their microwave emissions through the water for their boombox Texas tests and that sort of thing. Anyway, I was just hoping it was something you consider. It seems obvious it would be something that would be a stressor for the reef and for the marine life.
Well, I think the answer is that if there was any indication that microwaves or sonar or anything like that was contributing, that they certainly would go there. At the moment, that's not where their research is leading them, and the indicators are not headed in that direction. However, let me be very clear with you that this is citizen science led, and this is community response. And as people share these concerns and questions, that will lead the conversation. So thank you all. This has been a great conversation, and I want you to know we'll certainly have them all back to say, okay, what do you know now? And I advise you to go check out the deal on our website and ask them your questions head on and get more information when you can. Mahalo. This was great.
Thank you.
Makai Watch, KKCR.
What if the sky should fall?